This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The U.S. Coast Guard says it's detected underwater noises for the second straight day in the search area for the missing submersible that was on a dive to the Titanic shipwreck. Carl Hartsfield is with the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution.
The ocean is a very complex place. Human sounds, nature sounds, and it's very difficult to discern what the source of those noises are at times. But I can tell you, they're sending data back expeditiously to the best in the world to analyze that data.
CBS's Roxana Saberi on the challenges facing the rescue crews.
Retrieving the vessel itself will also be complex once it's found, if it's found. The Navy does have a system that is designed to retrieve it and pull it out of the ocean to the surface. It's like a long cable on a spool.
It's been a scorcher in North Texas where it felt like it was over 100 degrees in some areas. Dallas resident Lauren Wainwright.
Just standing out here for like 2 seconds, you're sweating horribly.
Raised voices in the U.S. House today as lawmakers voted to censure Congressman Adam Schiff over comments several years ago about the Trump-Russia investigations. More from CBS's Scott McFarlane.
House will be in order.
Democrats surrounded Schiff on the floor when he was called to the dais to be formally censured. They cheered him. They applauded him, and then they shouted, shame on you and shame to the Republicans.
Schiff becomes the 25th House lawmaker to be censured. With the Supreme Court expected to soon rule on the use of affirmative action in college admissions, CBS News has surveyed Americans for their views on the subject. Our Stephen Portnoy reports.
The CBS News poll finds Americans roughly split on the question of affirmative action generally, with 53% saying such policies should continue and 47% saying they should be abolished. But on the question of college admissions, which the Supreme Court's expected to weigh in on this month, 7 in 10 in our poll say race should not be a factor.
CBS's MTS Taieb reports on a powerful explosion in Paris.
A suspected gas leak triggered a massive explosion at the Paris American Academy, a private fashion and design college with international students, including Americans. More than 30 people were injured, 4 critically.
Investigators say they found a new DNA link in their investigation into the murders of 4 students near the University of Idaho. CBS's Jerika Duncan reports.
According to court documents, a cheek swab taken from accused killer Brian Koberger is a statistical match to the DNA on a knife sheath that was found near 2 of the victims. Investigators say the DNA is 5 octillion times more likely to be Koberger's than from a random person.
Fed Chair Jerome Powell says more rate hikes are likely this year to fight inflation. This is CBS News.
Need hires who dazzle without the hassle? You need Indeed. Their powerful platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Wildfire danger remains high for northern and southwestern Wisconsin this week. The DNR says that this year's fire season is outpacing last year's so far, thanks in part to the ongoing drought as well as dry and hot weather. In addition to the wildfire risk, the entire state is under an air quality advisory through Friday night due to unhealthy levels of ozone. The National Weather Service says conditions will stay hot and dry for at least a few more days. Roads used for agriculture in Wisconsin will see increased funding from the state. Today, Governor Tony Evers signed Senate Bill 247 into law, which will create the Agricultural Roads Improvement Program. Wisconsin Act 13 will support roads that wouldn't otherwise likely be targeted for state aid, such as roadways frequently used for farm operations. The bipartisan bill was authored by State Senator Howard Markline of Spring Green and had near unanimous support from the legislature and from various state associations. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today. 855-954-1186.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson & Wachs. GTWLawyers.com.
Look up cheese curds, you'll find this basic definition. Wet pieces of curdled milk.
Huh?
Well, it should also include the word delicious. As we continue to celebrate June Dairy Month, do you know how much milk is needed to make 1 pound of cheese curds? 16 ounces, 64 ounces, or 160 ounces, 10 pounds of milk? The answer coming up.
It actually is a sound of freshness.
Rachel Kerr is talking about squeaky curds. She's with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin and a bit of a cheese nerd.
Those elastic protein strands rub against the enamel of your teeth and create that characteristic sound.
The squeak turns stretchy when battered and deep fried. Some believe the idea to fry globs of cheese happened by accident. I consider it a happy accident. Okay, so did you guess it takes 10 pounds of milk to make 1 pound of curds? Now we want to know your favorite and where do you get your squeaky or deep fried curds? Go to our Civic Media Facebook page to share your answers. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, big fun on the House floor today as Gun Fetish Barbie and Marjorie Three Names went after it. Evidently called her a little female dog. Evidently, this is what Marjorie Three Names called Gun Fetish Barbie. A little three-legged dog. No, a little female dog. I can't say the other word. You know what I'm getting at. All because they have competing impeachment bills. Yeah, the crazy is taking over. And look, as I said from the beginning, I wanted Kevin McCarthy to get the speakership. I wanted him to have the ulcers. I wanted him to think of these two idiots going at each other all the time. I wanted this for him. And now he has had it. And here to share some thoughts on the big day, I've asked our good friend Pete Dominic to come talk with us. Pete is a stand-up comic, also host of Stand Up with Pete Dominic. You can find that at standupwithpetedominic.com and wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'll get that as well. Pete, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, I will always take time with you. And it was a crazy day in Washington. There's a lot of action because you had the censorship. Or one might look at it differently as like a badge of honor of Adam Schiff by these crazy people. And then you had John Durham being questioned as well, which, of course, obfuscates other hearings. There's an important Senate hearing as well. But yeah. And then, of course, the fight that you just mentioned. So a lot to talk about today. A lot happened today. But I think it's really important. You and I are old enough. You're older than me, but we're old enough to remember that John Boehner had to deal with these psychos, and he's like, well, yeah, I'm out of here. I'm going to go work for a marijuana company. And then who comes in? Mr. Serious, a policy wonk, yeah. Paul Ryan, who to me was always a mendacious, terrible, corrupted person in ideology, to say it nicely. And I always said he was an extremist, and then he takes over, and then he has to deal with even crazier people. Yeah. And then he says, peace, I'm out of here. And he goes to work in the private sector, takes some big cushy job. And also, I think, on the board of Fox News, right? And now you're left with all hollow barrel. Kevin McCarthy stands for nothing, has no principles, will sell out to anybody. He's a pilot fish's pilot fish. And now he can't obviously control these people either. And they're tearing each other apart. In the meantime, Democrats are as good as I've ever seen them. They are as together as I've ever seen them. They are as rhetorically I think, on target as we could ever imagine. It used to be these old, like, Gerald Nadler types. He's still there, believe it or not, 120. But now you've got so many people out there, from Hakeem Jeffries to AOC to Daniel Goldman and Jared Moskowitz. There's, like, dozens of amazing speakers who are very, very good, and they were good today. Jamie Raskin, I mean, I could go on and on. What are your thoughts?
No, they were great today, but, you know, here's the thing. It's kind of hard not to be, given the material that's being handed to them.
I hear you.
You as a comedian looking at this going, this is gold. You know, seeing these two idiots, you know, Gun Fetish Barbie and Marjorie Three yeah. Names at each other over, they're going to try and impeach the president that there's no basis for. But I was waiting for a slap fest. And then that Durham hearing, my goodness, the level of red hat was just remarkable to me. So from your perspective as a comedian, this has got to be gold.
Well, you know, listen, if you want to have a serious conversation, the truth is you can't do comedy about politics, hardly any. And more, because people can't stand it. So, you know, for comedy on social media, yeah, but like, and there is plenty to talk about, obviously, but it's just a constant party of contradictions, Rick, and that's always funny, because you can always turn these things into a joke. When, I mean, today John Durham didn't even understand what Matt Gaetz described to him, the Washington Generals, who always lose to the Harlem Globetrotters. They're paid to lose. And he explained that it was so insulting, so disrespectful, Matt Gaetz, to this guy, John Durham, that, you know, I don't think he was expecting that. I thought he thought Republicans brought him up there, and he was shot. He was a wreck, just an absolute wreck there. And it was a terrible day for Republicans. The idea that they censored Adam Schiff, and of course George Santos is out to do whatever he wants. We're going to find out more about him later this week, who paid for his bail, and that they didn't realize that censoring only made Adam Schiff much like Obi-Wan Kenobi when he was struck down. I mean, yeah. Adam Schiff should have said, if you censor me today, I'll be more powerful than ever before.
The first thing he did, man, is they sent out fundraising emails. He's going to raise a ton of money off of this, and they're going to put him in the Senate. This could put him in the Senate.
There are two women that would both make awesome senators that are running California. They're both congresswomen as well, Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. They'd both be great, but they would kill both of them to be censured by this Republican House, because the attention that it's given him and the money that it's raising for him. And, you know, listen, Adam Schiff, I don't know what you think about him. I think he's a superstar. I think that he has a memory for details, and he has a mind and understanding of law. He's a former, I think, DA and constitutional law. He's a brilliant guy, and it's just a real dumb thing to go after him, I think.
No, but here's the thing, and this is, I'm glad you framed this way, because we're in this world, Pete, and you know this as well as anyone, where you've got on one side really smart people with credentials, you know, they've done stuff. Yeah. And then you've got people over here like Marjorie Three Names and Gun Fetish Barbie and the rest of them who have not.
Yeah.
And now we're supposed to say they're equal, and they're not. I mean, I'll bring up the Joe Rogan thing, which to me is just incredible. The fact that there's a big to-do about putting Professor Hotez on the same platform with someone like a kook like RFK Jr. To me, that, and I've had people go, well, what's wrong with them debating? Just because Professor Hotez has got a PhD doesn't mean he really knows anything. Yes, it does. It means he knows a lot.
Well, he's got more than just a PhD. Peter Hotez is a good friend of mine, and I had him on my show on Monday. And when it comes to intellect, first of all, when it's Democrats in the House versus Republicans, or even in media, the type of language and the type of vocabulary that you hear from Democrats, it's like Shakespeare versus cave people. I mean, like, you can, I'm not saying that anybody who has a more extensive vocabulary is necessarily more intellectual, but it's a decent bet often that when it comes to argument. But then the opposite side of that is you could be really good at arguing and have a great extensive vocabulary, including for medical terminology, and have no idea what you're doing when it comes to talking about science and win a debate. And therein lies the issue. You can be a smooth talker and know some terminology, which is what RFK Jr. is. You know, RFK Jr. is just a more respectful version of Alex Jones. They're saying the same things. It's just that RFK is a Kennedy and he has this voice issue as well as Alex Jones, but they're both, you know, caricatures of human beings and performers. But the point is, RFK versus Hotez, RFK wins every time because Peter Hotez isn't a debater. He's a scientist. He's doing science. He's peer reviewing things. He's researching. He's in a lab. He's creating life-saving vaccines. And RFK is going to say something and make something up and say something like, oh, 10,000 studies prove this. What could Hotez say? No, they don't?
Yeah.
I mean, no,
In every one of these situations, Pete, the guy with the hammer wins. If you're willing to tear something down, the guy with the hammer always wins.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's easy to win a debate by being a kind of a smooth talker. I mean, I've been a part of many debates my entire career. I've watched debates, Intelligence Squared debates, Oxford style debates. And you got to get two people that are of equal stature, education, credibility, not someone who's a great comedian and a smooth talker versus, you know, like I talked to Hotez this week and he said that Neil deGrasse Tyson recently did one of these debates with somebody. And he said he didn't look good. Tyson clearly knew what he was talking about a lot more, but he didn't look good. You know, scientists, they want to get into the nuance. They want to have longer answers. And what Hotez said was, my opinion is that Neil deGrasse Tyson having a debate with some street person sets us back. Yep. Just the idea that you're having it raises the level of the street person. In that case, by the way, me, like I interview experts all day, every day, scientists, people who are actually doing gain of function research, virologists, whatever. But that doesn't mean I could debate any of them. The arrogance is, I don't even understand where people get this idea that they think they know more than a scientist. Even if it's not a good scientist, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't know how to do research. You can't read an abstract. You've never conducted a study, and it's
this where you're wrong, Pete. I did my research. I was sitting on the can watching that YouTube video. I know.
No, but you could go Google anything you want, and you can find a study that will tell you you can grow a tail, Rick, and I can grow my hair back. I could find a study. I could even find a supplement. I could find a research paper that's going to say the way for me to grow a tail and my hair back is to take fish oil pills. I could find that study, and then I could go disseminate it across social media and to all my friends. That's not how it works.
Why do I have to get the tail, Pete?
Well, I wasn't sure what you want. I wasn't sure what you wanted to change about your, you know, your physical body. I assumed, I made an assumption, and it was unfair. I apologize. I take it back.
Why do I get the tail? I don't want a tail.
It was a functional tail. It was like you could swing from trees.
I could whip people with it.
You could hit people for sure. You could use it as a weapon. It's got spikes on it. You can make it whatever you want. This study says.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're Pete Domick, stand-up comic, also podcaster. StandUpWithPeteDominick.com, the website if you want to check out the work that he does there. Also, make sure you get his podcast, one of my favorite out there. Now, here's the thing, and this is what bothers me. I mean, you know, I look at Rogan, and I've listened. I like him. I don't like him. I don't have any visceral hatred or love. He is what he is. But to platform someone like this and to create this kind of environment... You know, we talked about the blood-brain barrier and how Wi-Fi is killing us, and how it was just one of these things where you're scaring the dim, you're getting the dim all worked up to the point where, as I'm sure Professor Hotez told you, someone showed up at his freaking house.
Yeah, I saw that. I had talked to him just like an hour before that. As a matter of fact, privately we were talking, and then, you know, right after that, that's what happened. Listen, I disagree with you on Joe, and I know Joe, and I like Joe personally. Has been really good to me. I mean, we came up in comedy together, and he, after I lost my gig at Sirius, he had me on a show to help me launch my podcast. It was a really amazing thing, and I thought our conversation was great. But something happened with COVID. And when he went to Spotify and the kind of what he sees as the canceling of a lot of comedians and other men. And I'd love to talk to him about it. I'd love to hear more what he thinks about it. But, you know, Peter Hotez knows Joe too. He'd been on the show 3 times. He privately messaged Joe several times. He told me, and you can listen to him on my podcast, talk about this timeline. And Joe didn't return his messages, and he didn't have him back on. What does that say? What kind of person then will do that and also then platform these people? Like, what happened to him? So I do judge Joe now, and I think he's doing a lot of dangerous, irresponsible things on a regular basis, and I think it's very, very dangerous what he's doing. People are dying as a result, have died. Thousands, at least 200,000 people, Hotez says, and, well, the studies show, died as a result of not getting a vaccine when they had easy and free access to it. They would have lived. And it's because of this kind of platforming, of these kinds of opinions. And there's no basis in truth to it. Vaccines are miracle drugs. The COVID vaccines are even more miraculous because of how quickly they were developed. They're not killing people. They are saving people. And the idea that we are demonizing, and by the way, Hotez developed his own vaccine at Baylor University, he and his team, and they should be nominated for a Nobel Prize for it, because that vaccine was rolled out in developing countries like Bangladesh and in India and Botswana and other countries in Africa, and it saved millions of kids' lives. And he, guess what he didn't do? Patent it. No. Anybody that wants to recreate it, they can use it. They can have it. Who paid for that? University paid for it, and an NIH grant. No corporate shills, which is what they're calling him. He made a life-saving vaccine, and people are calling him a murderer. It's the world we live in.
No, and it's a scary world we live in. And that's why I brought it up. Look, I don't know Rogan. I don't follow him that much. But I do see the clips occasionally. And as I said from the beginning, there's only one way that Hotez would go down, and that is negatively. Because all they would want to do is get that moment of honesty where he said, well, you know, where scientists get into being honest and long-winded, and all they would take is the 30-second bit of honesty
One of the things that didn't get as much attention, and it came back up, Joe reshared this part of it, is Joe Rogan had Peter Hotez on, and they were talking about vaccines and their effectiveness. This is before COVID, I think this one was. And Joe basically was ridiculing Peter for not being healthier. He said, you know, Peter admitted, I don't eat very well, and I eat too much, and I don't, you know, take good enough care of myself. And Joe said, well, why don't you do that? Why don't you, you know, he was trying to make a point, Joe Rogan, and people are, that a vaccine scientist who created a life-saving vaccine, not taking great care of himself, is somehow a good argument or a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was sad and pathetic and cruel to say that to somebody, you know, to juxtapose getting a vaccine and eating healthy. One of those things is the easiest thing in the world. I mean, imagine, put it this way. Imagine if we could all be extremely healthy by just getting an injection or taking a pill. I mean, by the way, there are a lot of pills and treatments that we do take that make our lives much better. Guess who makes them? Pharmaceutical companies, yeah. Which I'll never defend, and they're easy to criticize, but they make people's lives a lot healthier and better and save your lives in a lot of ways too. It's a nuanced conversation and it matters, but the idea that you're going to sit here and say, oh, why don't you take better care of yourself? You're sitting here telling people to get vaccinated, and meanwhile you eat bad food. What? Food? What are we doing? Food is an addiction. Like, everybody has issues around food. It's a preposterous notion to say that it's easy to eat well. It's easy to get a vaccine and not die. It's the easiest thing I've ever did or done to not die was getting jabbed.
Yeah. No, look, I had several people wish me dead here recently because I finally contracted COVID, and it was not fun. But I was glad I got the vaccine and the booster. I think it's what helped me get through it. But I was amazed at the number of people who wished me ill. And I want to remind you, didn't work.
I apologize for those texts.
Last question I got for you. You know, I look at RFK Jr. Well, I see him as just a kook, going to be speaking at the Maniacs for Liberty group in Philadelphia, those Mom for Liberty idiots.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, by the way,
is there a moment where we finally realize that there are some kooks on the Democratic side, too?
I mean, there's no kooks that are lawmakers in the United States Senate or House. So when if you want to say that there are people who identify as members of the Democratic Party that are kooks, Sure, fine. Yes, let's define kook. But there are no anti-vaxxers in the House or in the Senate. There's no climate change deniers. There's nobody that wants to take your voting rights away. There's nobody in the House or Senate or any state house that's a Democrat that does not think Joe Biden won the election. I classify kooks as Earth One and Earth Two. Those that believe in reality and live in reality, and those who don't. Are people that identify as Democrats sometimes that? Yeah. But you can't show me a kook in the House or the Senate in 2023 that believes in crazy conspiracy theories, that doesn't believe that things that are happening happened. I mean, I don't think you'll find any.
I agree with you. It's a good definition. Like it. Earth One and Earth Two. It's an interesting way of putting it. Pete, as always, great stuff. I appreciate you taking some time for us. Hope folks will check out the podcast, Stand Up with Pete Dominic. StandUpWithPeteDominic.com, the website.
By the way, Earth One is the Earth on fire. Earth Two is not having any issues with climate at all. It's great.
Okay.
Burn it up.
All right, there we go. Pete, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you, buddy.
Good stuff. Pete Dominic. Make sure you check out the website, StandUpWithPeteDominic.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. For working people, come and go.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So some good news. On Monday, the president and the administration is going to be going around the country saying, hey, you know what? We did this. Look what we've been doing. The road show will begin on the 26th. Going to travel across multiple states, pointing out the fact that through the American Rescue Plan, through the bipartisan infrastructure law, the CHIPS and Science Act, also the Inflation Reduction Act, lots of investments going into projects that are being built, new roads, new bridges, chip manufacturing plants, new clean energy investments, new manufacturing returning, things they should have been doing all along, as I've been saying. They now have a website that I didn't know about. And I think because of the Shapiro thing, and good on Shapiro for the live feed of the construction being done on I-95, the website invest.gov. You can see all the projects that are going on and the investments happening in communities across the country. Good stuff. Got to highlight this. Got to get out there and point out, and I'm still going back to my 20-foot cardboard cutouts of Joe Biden pointing, going, I did that. And pointing out the reality that Republicans all along this way, now remember the whole debt debacle, the whole debt ceiling debacle was all about gutting these investments. It was all about repealing provisions of investing in the future. And I would argue, quite simply, all politically motivated. It's not that Republicans don't want to invest in infrastructure. They don't. They don't do it. They may say they do. I mean, we went through 4 years of Trump having every week being infrastructure. We didn't put a shovel in the ground. Well, he did at Foxconn. That was supposed to be, like a gazillion million jobs and turned out to be a handful. Their policies don't bring us anything. Biden's actually doing the work. And, going across the country into these states where things are getting done, I think important. And I think having the kind of feed like we saw earlier on I-95, I think that stuff's important. I think the visuals are important. And then talking about the jobs that are being created. The fact that federal money is being used in these projects means prevailing wage laws are enforced, means workers are getting good wages, good benefits, good conditions. There's a floor under their feet, and work, and that money is then going back into the local economy and reverberating through. This is good stuff. The faster we roll out more of it, the better. But all we hear from our Republican friends are austerity, cut, slash, burn. Make government so small we can drown it in the bathtub. This is where you got to tell the other side of this story. The investments that are going to be made and how they're going to benefit us. So good on the administration. Invest.gov, the website.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day that 10 Irish miners were hung in Pennsylvania. They were part of a group of 20 who had been sentenced to death for allegedly being part of the Molly Maguires, a group of alleged radical Irish miners. Miners were on strike in the Schuylkill County anthracite coal region. The Mollies were accused of perpetrating violence and murder against the mine owners. Newspapers helped to rile up anger against the striking Irish miners. A Pinkerton detective infiltrated the group, and his testimony doomed those he accused to the gallows. Since the hangings, many have questioned his testimony and the cases made against the miners. But at the time, many newspapers celebrated the hangings. On the day of the executions, the New York Tribune called the men, quote, the wild beasts of the collieries of eastern Pennsylvania. The Carbon Advocate of Lehighton, Pennsylvania, declared, the majesty of the law has been vindicated. The community breathes more freely now that these men, who feared neither the laws of God or man, have met their doom. The day has gone down in labor history as the Day of the Rope, or Black Thursday. The message of the hanging was meant to be sent to all who would dare stand up against the mine owners. In 1979, the governor of Pennsylvania posthumously pardoned John Blackjack Kehoe, one of the alleged leaders of the Molly.
Down the mines, no sunlight shines, those pits, they're black as hell. In mud and slime, they do their time. It's Paddy's prison cell, and they curse the day they travel.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
The six-person majority of far-right supremes, who presently dominate America's judicial system, seems intent on demonstrating that having a seat on our Supreme Court does not mean there is anything supreme about them. Consider one bottom-line measure of character that is central to the court's integrity: financial ethics. This simply requires the judges to file annual reports to reveal any sources of outside income and gifts, thus providing some minimal assurance to regular folks that the eminences are not taking personal payments from moneyed interests seeking favorable court rulings. But unlike all other top government officials, Supreme Court justices have a loosey-goosey system for reporting financial conflicts of interest. It's called Trust Us. Thus, for years, Clarence Thomas has been taking millions of dollars worth of gimmies from a right-wing corporate billionaire while voting to impose this benefactor's plutocratic agenda as the law of the land. Yet, in two decades of financial reports to the people, there is not a whisper from his supremeness that he has regularly pocketed a wealth of gratuities from this special friend. Or take John Roberts, the Chief Justice, who poses as a paragon of judicial independence while aggressively pressing an agenda of corporate supremacy over the common good. While he's not known to take payments from corporate interests, his wife does. She's been paid millions of dollars in commissions to recruit lawyers for firms that have business before Justice Roberts. Yet, until this special interest enrichment of his family was recently uncovered, Roberts never mentioned it in his annual reports. Meanwhile, every federal official must agree to abide by a code of ethical behavior, with the exception of 9 officials who have exempted themselves, saying, "Trust us." Yes, the Supremes. This is Jim Hightower saying, since the court refuses to fix itself, the people must. To help, go to fixthecourt.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, the insurrectionist on January 6th who jammed a stun gun into the neck of Michael Fanone pled guilty to felony conspiracy, obstruction of an official proceeding, tampering with documents, inflicting bodily injury on officers using a deadly or dangerous weapon, 12 and a half years he's going to get in prison. And, you know, on the way out the door, evidently, he shouted, "Trump won!" On a certain level, you got to give him credit to being committed to the cause. And committed he shall be. For the next 12 and a half years, he's going to be a guest of the state, and good. I'm sure he will enjoy his time. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the fun and the entertainment in Congress today, I've asked our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst Bob Ney, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So they censured Adam Schiff. Thoughts?
Well, the previous censure, I think, was when Paul Gosar, Arizona Republican, posted an anime when the media depicted him killing Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I think it might have included Biden, I forget. Previous to that, there were some censures. I remember right after I left, Congressman Rangel, that was for some tax, you know, forms and things. Schiff has been the target, of course, for, you know, quite a while, and they say he abused his position on the Intel Committee. I think this kicks it to the Ethics Committee now, unless I'm wrong. I think it kicks it over there.
Yeah, but this, and look, I'm not an expert on this by any chance, which is the reason I asked you to come and share some thoughts. This is him, you know, he's using his committee to investigate something. This is, for me, this seems like you're doing something in an official capacity. If this is the case, if we're going to go after him for doing this and being, even if you agree that he was overzealous, shouldn't we be going after Jim Jones for all, or Jim Jordan for all the Benghazi nonsense?
Well, I mean, we can go after a whole history of people, you know, forever. I mean, going back to, you know, of course, McCarthy did abuse, you know, the committee. But, you know, if they start down these paths, then, you know, anybody that does something when they chair a committee or maybe a ranking member could be up for grabs, you know. You know, of course, they called the resolution false and defamatory, and they were saying, you know, of course, McCarthy was saying that he abused his position. If it goes to the Ethics Committee, they've got to see that, you know, he either did or he didn't abuse his position. And if he didn't, then he got censured for having a different opinion, you know. And I think all of these things that have been going on, even throwing, you know, some people off committees that I don't like some of the people that got thrown off of the committee. But if I was there, I don't think I would want them thrown off committees because we have different opinions, you know. And this has been happening here in the last X amount of years in modern times.
I agree with you. And we agree on the fact that, you know, Marjorie Three names shouldn't have been thrown off her committees, especially because she's an idiot. And I want her there so I can point to her and go, this is the reason we need X, Y, and Z. But that's a whole nother thing. But I want to get your thoughts. You know, evidently, there's some talk that McCarthy has lost control. There was the little dust up between Marjorie Three names and Gun Fetish Barbie, where Marjorie Three names called you know, Boebert, a female dog, a little female dog. It's the best I can get to the actual wording. Has he lost control, do you think? Or did he ever have control?
This has been going on, you know. Marjorie, three names. I do call her that now, by the way, as a result of hearing you say it. Got into that dramatics. Then she was outside the Capitol. There was a Democrat member from New York. I can't remember his name. And they were going back and forth, and I seriously thought both of them needed to go inside the Capitol, you know. It was name-calling, and you know you should resign, and no, you should resign. And it's just, to me, it's getting old. There's so many problems in America. The whole thing's getting old. At some point in time, McCarthy's got to try, at least, to settle this stuff down. I know, you know, they can say, well, we do what we want. You know, we're elected. Well, that doesn't mean you destroy the decorum of the place. And no. At some point in time, at least when I was there, if people did certain things that were way out of whack, then the prospective party leaders would call them in and say, look, you know, free country, but you don't need to be doing these things. And it's a distraction. And if McCarthy doesn't step in and do something, he's just going to have continuing mounting problems, especially between his own members.
Yeah. Now, if I'm the speaker, you know, if I'm looking at Marjorie Three Names and Gun Fetish Barbie having this little dust up, I just point him to the cloakroom. You know, go back there, deal with however you have to, and whenever you come out, it better be smiles. If one of you are bloody, then that's fine. But at the end of the day, behind the door, you figure this stuff out, and then you come back out. But we're not that society anymore. Now it's all about getting the social media clicks and getting the attention. And why were they arguing? Because evidently they think that their competing impeachment bills are going to land them on the F channel or the podcast circuit.
Well, I think if you look at the two members yesterday, two of them were thrown out, one Democrat and one Republican in Virginia. Both of them were in the state legislature. Both of them tended to be people that, you know, did the Marjorie Three Names stuff and, you know, said things and the whole drama, and both of their opponents ran against them saying, you know, we're going to be the drama-free people that do our job, and they both were ousted. So, you know, it may play well. Boebert barely won her election. That should have taught her a lesson. Marjorie, I don't know her district. I don't know if they will grow tired of this eventually or not, but it's so theatrical and so overboard. And maybe I'm just getting old and I just say, well, in my day, but I've got to tell you, this stuff did not happen out there to this level years back. This is now political entertainment. They're trying to get their day in the sun or their 5 minutes in the news or whatever. And I think it's just totally wrong.
Yeah, and what's happening is we're not getting things done. This is why I love what Biden's doing. You know, I'll be honest, I love what Joe Biden's doing. It's about getting the job done. As I said a moment ago, you know, on Monday, they're going to get back out on the road, you know, talking about investing in the country and all the projects that are going on. Also, you know, he's been hammering, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because he's been hammering on these junk fees and all this stuff. In fact, he tweeted out today, you shouldn't have to pay an extra $50 to sit next to your child on a plane, pay a surprise resort fee at a hotel to stay, pay $200 to terminate your cable plan, or huge service fees to buy concert tickets. That's why my administration is taking action to curb them. I mean, this may sound like a small thing, but it's an action. It's getting something done. It's moving us, I think, in a direction that's going to help working people, whereas the sideshow we see in Congress just shows me that they're devoid of ideas and any interest in helping people. I'm looking at Biden going, you know, this may be a small thing, but I think this is going to resonate with people.
With the airlines?
Yeah, I mean, with all the stuff, you know yourself. If you want to book an extra, you want to book your seat, you got to pay for extra baggage. You got to pay for a seat that you want. You want concert tickets. The service fees are outrageous. Every time you turn around, someone's nickel and diming you to death with all of these idiotic fees that are hidden, that are not hidden. I mean, it's at some point, I think he's onto something that I hope moves us in a direction where we stop getting nickel and dimed to death.
Well, yeah, he's on to something. Look, he mentioned this in the State of the Union, of course, and he used the example of rebooking fees as much as $200 a ticket. Rick, as you know, I recently went to India, and in the past, when something came up, you know, my dad got sick, with the American air carriers, I called and I had to move my flight one day, and I did it in plenty of time, which allows them to sell the seats, especially international seats. They sell. There's waiting lists. And my charge was, I think, $250 to $300 and some dollars to move that day.
Wow.
You know, of my flight. This time I booked Air India. I had to move the entire flight twice. And Air India's charge was $5.50. You know, a technical fee. And I was like, wow. How can they do it? But, you know, our American air carriers can't.
Because we got to pad the bottom line, Bob. It's about the profit.
Yeah, they nickel and dime you to death. I mean, I used to fly all the time. I mean, it's just, you're nickel. It's gotten worse, though.
Bob, now you're showing your age. Nickeled and dimed. They're not nickel and diming. These are 20s and 50s now.
Well, yeah, they're dollar and $10 in us now, you know.
I mean, it's highway robbery. Look, I wanted to get tickets for my kids to see a concert, and the fees and all of the charges and the convenience fees and the service fees and all this stuff, almost the exact price of the ticket. I mean, it's insane to me, and it's a giant ripoff. And I guess, again, I'm sounding old, but I remember when you could go to the box office and buy the freaking ticket from the location. They've got such a monopoly on this stuff that someone's got to do something about it. Again, this is why I think Biden's on to something, because I know a lot of people are frustrated by this.
Well, I think the president's on to something, number one. And I'll tell you where I'd like to see him go with this further. As you know, I flip houses, and certain products and prices went sky high. Then when the supply chain or the food chain got corrected, guess what? It never went down at all.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see somebody look into it, because I think it just all went into manipulation through corporate profit. That's what I think.
And this is where I go, if we had a functional Congress, if we had functional people in the House and people in the Senate who gave a rat's behind about working people, we would have already had these commissions looking into this stuff. We would have had today's Harry Trumans. We would have had the Teddy Roosevelts and the Trust Busters breaking up these monopolies. We'd have this if we had a functional system.
Right, right. Focusing on issues versus theatrics.
Yep. No, I'm right there with you. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Bob Nay, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. Got to get your thoughts on the Durham hearing today. Nothing new in my view. I guess, you know, depends, as I said at the beginning, whichever hat you're wearing, the red hat or the blue hat, insert your talking points here, kind of what it was. Anything for you in that Durham hearing?
Yeah, I thought it was all over the board. I thought the most responsible comment on the Democratic side was Representative Jim Hines of Connecticut. He's the committee's, you know, top-ranking Democratic member. First, he said reforms are needed, which I believe they are. I could give you a lot of examples. And then he said he believes the committee can work together to address the issues. Well, I don't know. Good luck on that one. But he confined it to the FBI and the FISA court, which the FISA court needs looked at. It's been a rubber stamp. But Hines added that the Durham report didn't find politicization within the FBI, but it found confirmation bias, which is not good. So I thought that was the balance that was needed. Now, it was weird, though, Rick, because on one hand, here's Durham, and then he gets criticized for, you know, sticking up for Barr. But yet Durham didn't come out with the report that really the Republicans wanted.
Right.
You know, he really didn't.
No, there was nothing there.
They wanted a lot more. So I thought Durham was just going to get it from both sides, you know, on the thing. But I thought that Jim Hines made some really good comments. There wasn't politicization. So when Durham was attacked pretty bad, I thought, okay, well, wait a minute. He didn't find politicization. So It's come and gone, you know, it's done. As far as going in and, you know, doing away with the FBI and the DOJ, Republicans aren't going to be able to do that. So that probably leads to where they'll maybe try to tweak it, but again, let me just throw this out here. How on earth do you tweak a system right now with everything that's going on in the federal court system and with Trump? It doesn't happen. Yeah. Not now. No. Not right now.
What do you think of Trump's defense, his latest defense that's come out, evidently answering a question to Brett Baer saying, you know, the reason I had those classified documents is they were in boxes with my stuff in it. You know, and my stuff clearly more important than your stuff. I didn't have time to go through it all. So yeah, I mean, maybe they were in there, but it was my stuff.
Well, I think the Brett Baer interview in itself was fascinating.
Yeah.
Brett Baer asked the question about the people that Trump, you know, in one hand said, I've got the best in the world. Then he called them idiots and lunatics and crazy people and everything else. A lot of people went to the media, to the right, and were all over Fox News for asking this question this way. Well, I thought it was appropriately asked. And then Trump's answer on the material is going to be what we're going to see, which is, well, I don't know. I didn't, you know, I was president. You think I opened boxes and moved them? Somebody else did it. You know, we're going to hear this.
Yeah, interesting. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on the they haven't found the submersible little submarine that went down to the Titanic yet, have they?
Oh, the submersible?
Yeah.
No, that's so such a sad thing, because I was just thinking today, you know, the intensity of the people within that submersible and what they must be going through, and I was shocked at the price. It's $250,000 for that venture in that. And the CEO of the company is the pilot of it. And the problem with the submersible, of course, is it's not able, if it's in trouble, to come back on its own. It's not like a submarine.
Yeah.
It has to get to the mothership. So as of the last time I checked, there's nothing new. They heard some kind of sound, but they couldn't follow it.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm getting all of these interviews. Hey, what must they be going through? What psychologically? What are they thinking? They're thinking, how do I get the heck out of here?
Right. Well, yeah, and because somebody was saying today that, you know, the press will, you know, continue on with this for a while, as the press does, and then they will move to something else.
Yeah, this is one of those things where the fact that there's a billionaire on board, I think, is the reason that we've got so much attention. If it were you or me, Bob, I don't think it'd have made the headlines.
No, maybe not.
No, and people would be mocking us. How dare you use secondhand parts to go, you know, thousands of feet underground? How dare you use refurbished stuff to go, you know, thousands of feet underwater?
Well, if it was me and you, they would say we deserve it.
Yeah, so. As I said, lowest bid got the contract. But Bob, I appreciate the time as always. Great stuff, my friend.
Thank you.
Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst. I want to get your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'll take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. It became known in Pennsylvania labor history as the Day of the Rope. 20 Irish miners were hung for allegedly belonging to a secret group of labor radicals known as the Molly Maguires. The Mollies traced their history back to Ireland in the 1840s. The story goes that an Irish woman by that name stood up to the English landlords. Men fighting for Irish rights would declare themselves Sons of Molly Maguire. To what extent this secret organization actually operated in the United States is debatable. Irish workers who came to the United States often faced harsh discrimination. Many job sites would announce, "Irish need not apply." One place they did find work was in the often dangerous Pennsylvania coal mines in Schuylkill County. Franklin Goins, president of the Reading Railroad, controlled the mines in the 1870s. In late 1874, he announced a wage cut of 20%. The miners went out on strike. During the strike, the Mollies were accused of sabotaging the mines and even murdering mine supervisors. The mine operators quickly blamed any act of violence in the region on the Molly Maguires. Determined to infiltrate the Mollies, Gowan hired the notorious Pinkerton detectives. The Pinkertons sent in Irish-American James McParland under an alias to attempt to join the group. Based on his testimony, 20 miners were hung for murder. They were found guilty even though much of the testimony presented in the case was inconclusive and contradictory. In 1979, the governor of Pennsylvania posthumously pardoned John Blackjack Kehoe, one of the alleged leaders of the Mollies. In 1970, Sean Connery starred in a movie based on the story. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Some new polling out on renewable energy, and this look, this comes at a critical time as we're expanding our coastlines, our coastline power generation. You know, wind, we should have wind farms off of all of our coasts to generate the power that we need. I've talked to people who said, look, you know, we have the capacity to be energy independent if we would just do it. Between windmills and solar panels and all of the other technology that's out there, we could have a renaissance, 21st century energy renaissance. Now, does that mean we're going to replace fossil fuels? No, entirely no. But it means we're going to slow the demand, maybe even lessen it a little bit, which is going to make us a little bit better off. But this latest polling out says that by a margin of two-thirds, a 47% margin, two-thirds of voters support building offshore wind energy that have strong labor protections. 66% support, 19 oppose. Oddly enough, 16% don't know. A solid demographic. Democrats 75%, independents 36%, 16% Republicans, which again, you go, what is this love of the of fossil fuels? And I've had this conversation with people. It's almost like the more we say we want to move away from it, the more they cling to it, because you know it's almost a birthright. And look, I love my car as much as anyone. I do. I love driving. My wife and I, we love driving. Our kids love driving. We've driven, you know, thousands and thousands of miles, done cross-country tours driving. Love this. We could figure this out. This is the idea of moving in a future direction. Now, workplace safety and living wages are important. In fact, voters view those things as incredibly important. In fact, workplace safety, 89% said, yeah, we want safe workplaces. I was not surprised by that. 82% say the living wages and the benefits are important and an important requirement in doing this. And this is where, you know, when Jay Inslee was running for president, he was talking about this just transition. And I was saying, yeah, this is what we need. We need those people who are going to lose their jobs in coal mines and in coal-fired power plants and in the gas industry. They need to get jobs that are going to replace those. We're going to need to take those skills of pipe fitters and construction workers and use them in other ways to be able to generate what we need. So those jobs are important. And Inslee's plan was, look, you know, we need to unionize all of those jobs, make sure that those come with you know, prevailing wages, benefits that are going to make sure that you have health and retirement security. That's a big deal. Now, interestingly enough, voters really on point with the belief that offshore wind is going to be good for the economy. Two of their top two priorities for lawmakers. By a 37% margin, they believe offshore wind energy is good for the economy. That is good, and they also believe it's good for jobs. This is one of those no-brainer things, and it should really be a no-brainer. Where across the political spectrum, we go, yeah. It would be like, you know, 150 years ago going, no, we're not going to put the wheel on the river and create that hydroelectricity. We're not going to do that because it's going to, you know, it's going to slow down the water. I'm literally shocked sometimes when some of my more Trumpy friends are opposed to renewable energy. And they always use the talking point, well, you know, the sun doesn't always shine, wind doesn't always blow. Yeah, that's why you have batteries. That's why you create a system to store the built-up energy so that you can then use it in those moments. See how that works? I think we can do it. I think we're smart enough. I think we're capable. In fact, I know we are. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Is this a direction we should be heading? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. If you miss any portion of the program, by all means, grab the podcast, share the podcast, comment on the podcast,